W1590 AM Denmark, W250 CV Green Bay,
and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. Devastating tornadoes killed at least 23 people overnight in Mississippi. Dozens were hurt. Storm chaser Edgar O'Neill tells ABC News what he saw.
Complete and utter devastation. Just houses, roofs ripped off of houses, walls tucked down from houses. Trees up, seen several areas where parts of the asphalt had been jacked up from the ground.
Sharkey County, northwest of Jackson, experienced the most significant damage, and the State Office of Emergency Management says the numbers are expected to change. President Biden concluded his trip to Canada Friday. He and Prime Minister Justin Trudeau agreed to a deal that will see Canada accept 15,000 refugees from Latin America and the Caribbean over the next year. U.S. carried out airstrikes on Iranian-backed fighters in Syria, retaliation for a drone attack on a U.S. base that killed an American contractor. And two people were killed, nine are missing after an explosion Friday at a chocolate factory in West Reading, Pennsylvania. Cause is under investigation. This is ABC News. The number of people with various health issues after using an over-the-counter eye drop is now at 68.
Pseudomonas aeruginosa is found in healthcare settings like emergency rooms and burn units, but a strain as drug-resistant as the one found in the artificial tears sold by EzraCare and Dalsim Pharma has never been seen in the U.S. before. Ophthalmologist Dr. Ashley Brissett.
Definitely check your medicine cabinet to see if you might have any of these products that are in your home, and if you do, discard of them right away.
Three people have died after using those drops. Eight have lost their vision. Four people have had to have surgical removal of the eyeball. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
After a three-day strike shut down over 1,000 schools in the nation's second largest school district, Los Angeles has reached a new deal with the local union of school support staff. It includes pay increases, a minimum wage bump, a $1,000 bonus, and health benefits for part-time employees. San Diego State beat Alabama and Miami topped Houston. That means for the first time ever, there'll be no number one seeds in the last eight of the NCAA men's basketball tournament. Brian Clark, ABC News.
Kids, they're just different than us. They have no inhibitions, consider silverware optional, and can find fun anywhere. And when kids get really sick, they're different than us too. Until now, children diagnosed with blood cancer have been treated like many adults. Not anymore. The Leukemia and Lymphoma Society proudly introduces the Dare to Dream Project, transforming treatment and care through advocacy, education, and the largest global clinical trial for kids with blood cancer. For the first time, a specific treatment can be matched to a specific type of cancer in a specific child. It'll be the biggest medical advancement for little patients in history. Dare to dream with us. Support the Dare to Dream Project and all the work that the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society does at LLS.org.
Great to listen to while having a Lineys and grilling some Sheboygan brats. The Cripes Cast with me, Charlie Behrens, on Civic Media. And don't forget the Civic Media app.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Two American banks collapsed in the past week. As Eric Tegedoff reports, some consumers are considering alternatives like credit unions.
Troy Stang is head of the Go West Credit Union Association, which represents more than 300 credit unions in Oregon and five other states. He says tumult in the financial market historically generates interest in the local structure of credit unions.
Whether it was with the dot-com bust, whether it was with the activities that led up to the Great Recession, consumers at their kitchen tables started having these conversations more intentionally about who is it that we do our financial services with.
Silicon Valley Bank's collapse is the second largest bank collapse in U.S. history. To get depositors their money, the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation has stepped in. Stang notes that National Share Insurance Fund, administered by the National Credit Union Administration, is the equivalent regulator for his institutions and is paid for by the credit union system. Stang says credit unions are not-for-profit and member-owned.
We're not accountable to Wall Street investors. We're not accountable to other forces outside of our membership. And so it's a much different model.
Stang says many of the credit unions in his association have spent the last week reassuring customers and noting differences in their institution structure from others. He adds a strong financial system is important for consumers, regardless of which institution they bank with. I'm Eric Tegedoff. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
And this is Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
Dear hero, whoever you are, you save lives. I live with sickle cell and the pain and the issues that come along with sickle cell every day. I've had lots and lots of blood transfusions over my lifetime, probably in the hundreds. Blood helps me to be able to live.
My final tour was in Afghanistan in 2008. I was hit June 3rd. The next thing I remember, I woke up in Germany. The doctor came in and said, we're going to amputate your leg. I had to get a lot of blood transfusion to stay alive.
Because of you, I'm allowed to see my son grow up.
Because of you, I got a second chance at life.
Giving equals living. Give blood. Replenish the supply. Make an appointment to give today by visiting hhs.gov/giveblood. This message is brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Good morning. This is Morning Cannolis. This is episode number 40. This is a production of Civic Media. We are here again this morning on this Saturday, March 25th. This is our weekend review, our analysis, and our discussion of the most important stories in law, in government, and the aspiration for justice in America. I thank you once again for joining me. My name is Jim Santel. We are coming to you this morning from the snowy studios of WAUK Radio in downtown Waukesha. I am joined here in the studio by my producer, Anya. And together, we're also going to be taking your phone calls this hour and next hour. Both hours this morning, as always, interested in your questions, your comments, your perspectives, your insights into these major stories in law, government, and justice in America. As always, we are going to be focusing on an ambitious but I think achievable agenda, a syllabus once again this morning that hopefully will be for you and for me and Anya as well, informative and inspiring at the same time. We always ask three questions here on Morning Cannolis. One of them is, what happened? What are the facts? What do we know about the circumstances out there? What has been in the news in recent times that we should understand with clarity and with accuracy as well? Second, why is it important? Why should we care? Why is it relevant? Why is it material to our understanding of our lives and the world, the society in which we live, the nation, the state here in Wisconsin in which we live? And finally, what do we do about it? Is there something we should do in response to the news, the significant news that is out there? What actions should we take? What responses should we undertake in response to those important stories, again, related to law, government, and justice in America? We're going to be addressing all of that after we do a little bit of reminiscing, once again, as we always do, about things that happened this day in history. Thank you so much for joining me this morning on Morning Cannolis, again, a production of Civic Media here in Waukesha, but at stations and in broadcast areas throughout the wonderful state of Wisconsin. Delighted to be with you this morning. Thank you for joining me for our discussion of these topics. Let's talk a little bit about what happened Saturday, March 25th. March 25th, generally, sometimes a Saturday, not always a Saturday in history. Let's talk about eight different events, some of them more significant than others, some of them interesting today that have animated to this day who we are as a nation, who we are as a world. 451, the city of Venice, the city of canals, which is presently facing some great challenges as a result of the changes in our climate. According to tradition and heritage, the city of Venice was first created, developed by its first residents, 451, on March 25th, way back in that 5th century. A second event, another significant second event, a couple of centuries after that, 1306, Robert the Bruce, made famous in movies of recent date, was crowned the Scottish king at Scone, freed from British rule at the time. He won the decisive battle of Bannockburn, 1314. That's when that happened, confirming Scottish independence in something called the Treaty of Northampton, 1328. Many of you may have recalled that from your history classes in high school, also in college, and again, made famous by a fairly famous movie of not too distant past. That's another significant event happening on March 25th in the history of our world. What else happened on this day? 1655, a Dutch mathematician and astronomer, Christian Huygens, discovered Titan. What is Titan? Titan is the largest moon of Saturn. So discovered way back in the 17th century, 1655, by that Dutch mathematician. Again, we have plainly developed far beyond that. We know much more about moons, not only of Saturn, but of other planets in our solar system. That opening up, in many ways, this notion that we're going to know more about the planets in our solar system way back there in 1655. 1807, a significant issue, a significant development, a circumstance, not only for the world, but certainly right here in America. The British Parliament finally abolished the slave trade in the British West Indies, which, of course, was the predicate, the basis for much of the slave trade in the developing colonies, ultimately the United States of America, leading to a very checkered history of our own, ultimately abolished, of course, in our nation by the Civil War of 1861 to 1865 and the Emancipation Proclamation issued, this major executive order by President Abraham Lincoln, bringing slavery, this horrific tradition in our own nation, to a decisive end. But today, 1807, the British Parliament across the Atlantic Ocean abolished the slave trade in the British West Indies legislatively for the first time. Back in our country, 1911, major event, again, likely something that you may recall from your own history classes in college, in high school, maybe even younger. Remember this fire that you heard about, this at the Triangle Building in New York City? It was a shirtwaist factory, killing 146 people at the time. Just cataclysmically bad, horrific, not only in terms of the tragedy, the human tragedy at the time, but also prompting the creation, the identification of the need for health and safety regulations for workers, for our labor community, for people who up to that time were in many ways abused by the supervisors and by other business owners in the wake of that horrific fire, 1911, at the Triangle Building, the shirtwaist factory, major reforms in New York City that ultimately began to spread across the country as we recognized. Today, of course, we have OSHA, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, one of the several agencies responsible for enforcing health and safety, beginning basically with this horrific event way back in 1911. Other things that happened today, 1957, something called the Treaties of Rome were signed, establishing a predecessor, if you will, to the European Common Market, but at the time establishing the European Community, the EC, and also the European Atomic Energy Commission, happening in 1957, long before the European Economic Community, which we know well today. 1965, one of the major, major events in our nation's history. We recall it recently. We recall it to this day. Martin Luther King and many other major civil rights leaders in our nation's history completed their march, the march from Selma to Montgomery, Alabama. The Selma to Montgomery, Alabama march. Our previous marches, as you again will recall from your history books, were halted by local police in Alabama. They completed that, again, not only changing the course of civil rights history in America, but establishing the capacity, the ability of Americans to protest. As we know as well, Bloody Sunday ultimately costing the lives, huge injuries as well of many people. That, along with this march in 1965, prompting major changes in how we understand the relationships among races in our nation, people of different national origins, all immutable characteristics, the great majority of civil rights pieces of legislation, the Housing Act, the Civil Rights Act, the Voting Rights Act of the 1960s, all of those coming out of these protests, including what Martin Luther King Jr. did at that time, this major protest, this march from Selma to Montgomery way back in 1965. A little bit more recently, 2002, a 6.3 magnitude earthquake struck the Hindu Kush region of northern Afghanistan. This continues to happen, as we know, recently in Syria and in Turkey, another major, major earthquake at that in our recent times. At that time, 2002, this 6.3 magnitude earthquake causing about 1,000 deaths, hundreds of thousands plainly injured, huge property damage just as recently as 2,000. 2002. So those events, all of those events happening on this day in history, March 25th. It is Saturday, March 25th. This is Morning Cannolis. And again, we are so delighted to have you with us this morning to talk, as we always do in this time period, to analyze, to make sense of the major stories in law and government and the aspiration for justice in America. We're going to be talking again about this ambitious syllabus that we have put together. And as we go into that, let me tell you a little bit about what you can expect this hour and next hour as well. Of course, this is a major week, principally because of some of the media focus on what did not happen, a huge anticipation this past week that perhaps the district attorney in Manhattan in New York would be returning a grand jury indictment, announcing a grand jury indictment, coming out of a grand jury in New York, charging the former president, Donald Trump, with criminal events, criminal activity in violation of Manhattan and New York law, having to do with the payment of hush monies to at least two women who may have been and probably almost certainly were involved with the former president, intimate relationships, an attempt to try to keep them quiet before the 2016 election. We're going to chat a little bit more about that. But more importantly, we're going to talk about other things going on around the country, again, anticipating that we may indeed be hearing more, not only from Alvin Bragg in the future, but also others. We know as well that a woman named Fani Willis, she is the DA, not in Manhattan, not in New York, but she is from Fulton County, Georgia. We have talked a lot about her case. It is unrelated to the hush money case in New York City, in New York State. But it is related to the attempt in 2020 to overturn the election and the events of 2021, January 6th in particular. Fani Willis investigating for a long period of time now whether or not criminal charges should be brought against the former president and members of his circle, among his senior aides, for attempts to undermine the election where? In Georgia, a very, again, state-specific focus. She is premising that, of course, upon the president's infamous call. We've all heard those tapes of his call to the Secretary of State asking for just one more vote than what was properly and accurately accounted for at the time as a way of getting the electoral votes for the state of Georgia. She is looking at that and then expanding her investigation to many, many other things that are also arguably, we will see, in violation of Georgia law when it comes to undermining the right to the franchise, compromising the voting rights of people in Georgia, and changing the electoral count, at least attempting to do so. We know the attempt was not successful, but nonetheless, Fani Willis maybe sometime soon, probably not immediately, but going to be presenting this to an indicting grand jury to determine whether or not state charges should come out of that jurisdiction. We're also going to spend a little time talking about Letitia James back in New York State. Letitia James is the Attorney General of the state of New York, and she has a civil matter that is going on right now. She's seeking about $250 million, as you know, against the Trump Organization, also attempting to keep them from other being involved in a corporation, a profit organization in the future. I'm going to talk about those and other things related to federal investigations, two of the president. We're going to begin that aggressive but achievable syllabus right after this first break here on Morning Cannolis.
Kids, they're just different than us. They have no inhibitions, consider silverware optional, and can find fun anywhere. And when kids get really sick, they're different than us too. Until now, children diagnosed with blood cancer have been treated like many adults. Not anymore. The Leukemia and Lymphoma Society proudly introduces the Dare to Dream Project, transforming treatment and care through advocacy, education, and the largest global clinical trial for kids with blood cancer. For the first time, a specific treatment can be matched to a specific type of cancer in a specific child. It'll be the biggest medical advancement for little patients in history. Dare to dream with us. Support the Dare to Dream Project and all the work that the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society does at lls.org.
VA has a new life insurance program for veterans with service-connected disabilities called Veterans Affairs Life Insurance, or VA Life. VA Life benefits include up to $40,000 in coverage, no medical questions to enroll, and no time limit to apply if you are age 80 or under. Veterans can apply, receive an instant decision, and manage their policy online. Learn more about VA Life or apply online by visiting va.gov/life-insurance. Protect those who matter most with VA Life Insurance.
Here's your updated forecast. A winter storm warning continues until 4 p.m. this afternoon. Cloudy skies this afternoon with snow likely. Daytime highs approaching 38. Winds out of the north 10 to 20 miles an hour. 25 tonight, mainly clear skies. Tomorrow, highs around 43. Highs level off around 40. Monday, under cloudy skies. 42 Tuesday, 3 to 5 inches of snow today. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Ray Miller. Right now, it's 30.
This is Civic Media for the Fox Valley.
AUKradio.com.
We are back here on Morning Cannolis. It is Saturday, March 25th. This is our every Saturday morning discussion of the major stories in law, in government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Again, as always, we are taking your phone calls here at the studios of WAUK Radio in downtown Waukesha. That number, 844-967-2789. We very much enjoy hearing from you, your questions, your perspectives, your comments on these major stories. Anya, my producer, is with me this morning in the studios here, and together we're going to be ensuring that you are joining me for this important discussion. Right before the break, that discussion began with a codification, a summary of some of the recent events and the non-events of this past week related to things that did not happen, including with much anticipation, the possibility that the district attorney in Manhattan, his name is Alvin Bragg, would be returning through a grand jury some charges against the former president. That did not happen, as we know. Also anticipating, perhaps at some point, the return by Fani Willis, the DA in Georgia, in Fulton County, Atlanta. Similar kinds of things in terms of process, but different kind of a case. That one focusing on whether or not there was a violation of state law having to do with the 2020 election and matters related to Georgia in particular. We're still waiting on those. We know that the grand juries have been meeting. And so appropriate this morning as a part of our civics lessons, which we try always to do here on Morning Cannolis, to talk about a grand jury. What is that? How does that happen? Well, we know as well that in our federal constitution, which we will get to when we talk about what's happening with respect to federal grand juries, we know that our federal constitution does in fact prescribe just this. It's Article 5, it's Amendment 5 to the Constitution. It says no person shall be held to answer for a capital or otherwise infamous crime unless on presentment or indictment to a grand jury, except with the exception of a few specifically described categories. That's in our federal constitution. States also establish the mechanisms through which prosecutors, in this case, Alvin Bragg, Fani Willis, and yes, federally, a fellow named Jack Smith, working under the auspices of the Attorney General and Department of Justice in Washington, D.C., prosecutors have the authority, obviously, to bring charges. And every state has different processes and procedures. Here in the state of Wisconsin, we do not have a formal grand jury process because of the nature of how our particular legislature assembled the mechanisms for charging people with famous or infamous crimes, other things in violation of state law. But both in New York and also in Georgia, there is a state grand jury. What is a grand jury, whether it's federal or state? The answer is, it is you and me. It may not be me so much because I'm a former prosecutor, unlikely to be selected for a grand jury, but they are bankers, they're teachers, they're masons, they're everybody in our community, educators, mothers, fathers, aunts, uncles, anyone of adult age,
called in, selected by a court, by a judge. Grand juries are always entities not of the executive branch, not of prosecutors, but of the courts. A very important thing to note, both in the federal system and the state system, they are entities of the judicial system. And they are brought together to hear, again, in private, without public notoriety, without coverage by the media, evidence of crimes with respect to state grand juries, typically anywhere from 26, sometimes a few more people, brought together over a long period of time. Federally, it's typically 18 months for juries, for grand juries to meet, to review evidence. Various states have various different time periods for the meetings and the bringing together, the gatherings of grand juries. But their role is to conduct, to oversee, and to listen to testimony of witnesses, to review documents, to determine whether or not there is probable cause to believe that an individual, perhaps also a corporation, we know that you can also indict, you can charge a company with felonies and with misdemeanors, whether a person or a company has violated the law. State law in the case of grand juries in states, but also federal law in the case of federal grand juries. Those federal grand juries also meet right here in Wisconsin, in the Eastern District of Wisconsin, located in Milwaukee and also in Madison, and also in Madison in the Western District. Likewise, grand juries meeting there to determine whether there have been violations of federal law here in the state of Wisconsin. So concept is the same, simply different kinds of government here. And what we have going on once again is those grand juries meeting in Manhattan, meeting in Atlanta to determine under state law whether there should be the return based upon a finding of probable cause that crimes have been committed. We also know, and I've more than hinted at it a few times already, that in Washington, D.C., we have activity by at least one, if not two, federal grand juries. Same kind of concept. Again, under the Fifth Amendment to the Constitution, this mandate that before anyone can be charged federally, that a grand jury review the evidence and return an indictment, if at all, based upon evidence presented to it. And so we know that Jack Smith, who is the special counsel appointed by the attorney general, still working for the attorney general, responsible to the attorney general. He is not independent in the literal sense of the word. He is not a freelancing prosecutor out there. He's a part of the U.S. Department of Justice. He has been conducting investigations of two things. Again, bringing together evidence and documents and testimony. As we know just from this past week, people who have evidence and relevant things to say, material things to say to a grand jury about crimes that may have been committed by the former president and other people. That's what Jack Smith is doing. His focus, two different investigations, although both of them are broad, both of them are looming large, not just over the former president, but frankly, with respect to all of us focusing on this. Like Alvin Bragg, like Fannie Willis has not yet disclosed, nor should he disclose, anything related to those grand jury investigations. His focus, of course, on two major matters, one of them having to do with something we've talked about a lot here on Morning Cannolis, and that is the presence of documents in Mar-a-Lago held by the former president. And then also the big one is January 6th. Right after the break, we're going to talk more about what happened just this past week in connection with those grand jury investigations being supervised by Jack Smith in Washington, D.C. Stay with us for that and more discussion right here on Morning Cannolis.
Fresh approach to finding common ground in the Fox Valley. This is Civic Media. Civic Media.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. Devastating tornadoes killed at least 23 people overnight in Mississippi. Dozens were hurt. Storm chaser Edgar O'Neill tells ABC News what he saw.
Complete and utter devastation. Just houses, roofs ripped off of houses, walls tucked down from houses. Trees up, seen several areas where parts of the asphalt had been jacked up from the ground.
Sharkey County, northwest of Jackson, experienced the most significant damage, and the State Office of Emergency Management says the numbers are expected to change. President Biden concluded his trip to Canada Friday. He and Prime Minister Justin Trudeau agreed to a deal that will see Canada accept 15,000 refugees from Latin America and the Caribbean over the next year. U.S. carried out airstrikes on Iranian-backed fighters in Syria, retaliation for a drone attack on a U.S. base that killed an American contractor. And two people were killed, nine are missing after an explosion Friday at a chocolate factory in West Reading, Pennsylvania. Cause is under investigation. This is ABC News.
Missed your favorite show? It's easy to find it wherever you listen to podcasts. Apple, Google, or civicmedia.us.
For Civic Media, I'm Jane Mavenaire. Here's what you need to know. Conservative Wisconsin Supreme Court candidate Dan Kelly says he's not bothered that one of his most vocal supporters has ties to the January 6th attack at the U.S. Capitol. Conservative activist Scott Pressler planned several Stop the Steal rallies promoting false claims about the 2020 election and was on the grounds of the Capitol January 6th, 2021. The Milwaukee Journal Sentinel reporting that Virginia Native is campaigning in Wisconsin on Kelly's behalf. Kelly says, quote, "I don't ask people to sit for an examination before they help me. I don't ask them what their backgrounds are. I'll take their help any day of the week," unquote. Kelly faces off against liberal judge Jana Protasiewicz on April 4th. The Tavern League holding its annual spring conference in Stevens Point April 3rd through April 6th. The 70 local leagues will have members attending to represent every county in the state. I'm Jane Mattenair. This is Civic Media News.
Dear hero, whoever you are, you save lives. I live with sickle cell and the pain and the issues that come along with sickle cell every day. I've had lots and lots of blood transfusions over my lifetime, probably in the hundreds. Blood helps me to be able to live.
My final tour was in Afghanistan in 2008. I was hit June 3rd. The next thing I remember, I woke up in Germany. The doctor came in and said, "We're going to amputate your leg." I had to get a lot of blood transfusion to stay alive.
Because of you, I'm allowed to see my son grow up.
Because of you, I got a second chance at life.
Giving equals living. Give blood. Replenish the supply. Make an appointment to give today by visiting hhs.gov/giveblood. This message is brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Uh-oh, Brad's buzzed.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he's starting with the woots. And now a speech.
I just want to say that friendship is about heart. Heart and brain. Who's with me?
Good thing is, he knows when he's buzzed.
And my brain is saying, when it's time to go home, somebody call me a ride.
Love that guy.
Me too.
Know your buzzed warning signs? Call for a ride when it's time to go home. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Hey, son, how are you feeling?
I'm fine, Pops.
What's on your mind?
I can't explain it.
When your kid can't find the language, find the lyrics. Start a conversation at soundedouttogether.org. Brought to you by Ed Council and Pivotal Ventures.
We are back. Thank you for staying with me and my producer, Anya, here in the studios of WAUK Radio. This is a production, of course, of Civic Media. Delighted to be here with you this morning, not just in Waukesha, but throughout the state of Wisconsin, as we talk about these major stories in law, in government, and the aspiration for justice in America. This week, as always, taking our cues from major stories happening just in recent days. And that has included this focus upon whether or not the former President Donald Trump and other people in his senior circle may, in fact, at some point be facing criminal charges in various state jurisdictions. We focused on New York and Georgia in particular, but also whether the federal government through the U.S. Department of Justice, the entity, the agency for which I worked and served as the U.S. attorney in years past, whether the Department of Justice and Merrick Garland, our attorney general, is likewise going to be announcing at some point the return of an indictment or indictments charging individuals with violations of the law with respect to not only Mar-a-Lago, the documents case, the
the classified documents case that resulted in a search of those premises way back in August of last year. That investigation is still underway. Lots of things to talk about there. And also whether or not a grand jury in Washington, D.C. will indict individuals federally for their senior roles, their managerial roles, their supervisory roles in conducting perhaps a conspiracy, an attempt to try to overthrow the government based upon the events of January 6th. Let's talk about things that happened just this past week in connection with both of those, having to do with privileges and having to do with, again, this notion that the grand juries are entities of the court. And they are conducted, of course, in private. Good reasons for that. We do not want to taint in any way the process, the procedure that is before those grand juries, witnesses coming and going, documents presented. And we also don't want to presume that anyone who is the subject of an investigation there is, in fact, going to be indicted. All those kinds of things. We wait appropriately in America until a body like this, an independent body, of citizens, of residents of our states, of our nations, make the determination based upon their review, their independent review, whether there's a basis for going ahead with charges. And so what happened this past week? There's a chief judge who named Beryl Howell. She is the chief judge of the U.S. District Court in the District of Columbia, where both of these federal grand juries are venue, where they're seated. They're meeting in a federal courthouse right there on Pennsylvania Avenue within the shadow of the Capitol building. They're meeting routinely these days, and they are, determining whether or not, with respect to the Mar-a-Lago investigation, whether there was a crime committed, whether there's probable cause to believe that the president and perhaps others inappropriately and illegally, criminally, seized, took with him, documents classified and otherwise that are in violation of the federal criminal law. We've had a lot of exposure to that. Why? Because in part, the former president, as you all well recall, challenged the conduct of that very investigation, pre-charging, no one charged yet, challenged that in a fundamentally flawed and ultimately abortive action in the federal court. The Court of Appeals shutting down the attempt by the former president to challenge that investigation, which continues again in Washington, D.C. and in other places. What happened this past week? Well, the chief judge responsible for overseeing that grand jury investigation, at least managing the grand jury matters that are presented by the prosecution, Jack Smith, made one very important ruling with respect to attorney-client privilege. There's an attorney named Evan Corcoran. Evan Corcoran, you may have seen his name, heard his name before. He continues to serve in the employ of the former president as an advisor, a counselor, and lawyer. And you know well, we all know well, that there's this concept called attorney-client privilege. It basically says that if I have a client and I'm consulting with them about legitimate things in connection with that representation, all of those things are privileged. They are not subject to disclosure, and no prosecutor, no civil litigator can get access to those. That's the policy decision that's been made for a very long time in our nation, establishing the sanctity of that relationship to ensure that we feel comfortable, not only as lawyers talking to clients, but clients talking to lawyers candidly in a way that promotes their representation. That's the attorney-client privilege. Well, Evan Corcoran has appeared before the grand jury investigating Mar-a-Lago previously, and he specifically said, in response to many questions of the prosecutor, of Jack Smith, that he would decline to respond to those questions based upon the notion, his belief, his statement, that doing so would violate that attorney-client privilege that he would have to give up. He would have to testify about things that were said to him in confidence, presumably, by the former president, Donald Trump, as a part of the representation relationship between them. So what happens? Jack Smith goes back to the judge, Beryl Howland, says, you know what? I think that privilege should not prevent this individual, Evan Corcoran, from testifying. And indeed, there is an exception to the privilege, for it's called the crime fraud exception. If you're talking about criminal conduct, if you're engaged in activities, if you're talking and consulting about matters that are related to crimes, the policy no longer attaches. And for that reason, the privilege, the attorney-client privilege, is no longer a part of that relationship. And sure enough, just this past week, Beryl Howell, the chief judge, agreed with the prosecutor, Jack Smith, and said, yes, there is no prohibition on Evan Corcoran, the past and current lawyer for the former president, to testify in front of this grand jury about, here it comes, here we go, things that Donald Trump said to Evan Corcoran during the course of their relationship. That is very significant, not only in terms of the decision that the attorney-client privilege is breached by virtue of the fact that they were talking about crimes, but also because of the future of that investigation. Evan Corcoran, you may recall, was among the attorneys who made representations in the middle of last year, June in particular, authored this letter to the Department of Justice and to others in government saying, you know what, we've taken a look at everything there at Mar-a-Lago. We've done a full review of all the places where these documents could be. Nothing more to see here. Made that representation to the government as a part of its investigation way back in June of last year. And of course, it turns out that that wasn't true. We know from the results of the properly authorized grant, the investigation and the search in particular of the premises in August, that there are a whole lot more documents discovered, hundreds of documents, many of them classified in nature. And so one of the things that the investigators here, the criminal investigators, the federal investigators looking at is, how did that statement come about? What kinds of things were the predicates for representing falsely, improperly, inaccurately, the status of those documents at Mar-a-Lago? The question is this. What did Evan Corcoran actually know? Was he relying? Was he relying on others, including perhaps the former president, to tell him about these things? Or did he know? Did he conduct his own independent investigation, he and other lawyers, to make that determination? All of that highly relevant, plainly, to the investigation, not only because of the intent, the purpose in making that misrepresentation, but also plainly revealing an awful lot, presumably, about what the president said, not only in connection with that representation, that lie, if you will, about the documents there at Mar-a-Lago, but other things said. Things like, what did the former president, tell you about the reason why he has the documents? What do you know? What did he say to you about his uses of those documents? Where are those documents? What is being done with them? Why does he have them in the first place? And what did Donald Trump tell you about those documents? In addition to the testimony, there may well be an awful lot of indication. Again, we don't know because of the secret nature of the grand jury process. May well be that Evan Corcoran has other documents, notes of conversations, all of those likely to be produced to the grand jury investigating all this matter, revealing more about that relationship and more about the things that the former president said during the course of their recent conversations, perhaps as late as recent days. What happened this past week? Beryl Howell, again, the chief judge, says, yes, you can ask this attorney about those things. No legal impediment to doing that. No problem with doing that. Go ahead. Attorney-client privilege does not prevent that from happening. And indeed, just yesterday, Evan Corcoran went into a federal building there in Washington, D.C., presumably entered in the grand jury and was presumably questioned by the chief counsel, the special counsel, or his representatives about all of those things. A major development, again, we don't know the substance, we don't know the material, the guts, if you will, of what he said, but plainly a huge movement forward, a huge development when it comes to what happens in this investigation of Mar-a-Lago. There is a second thing that the chief judge, Beryl Howell, did very recently, just this past week, in connection with the investigation, not of the Mar-a-Lago event, but rather of the major event, January 6th. We know, again, that the grand jury has been investigating whether or not there were federal crimes in connection with the attempt to undermine the Electoral College vote on January 6th. We have talked a lot on this program about other matters related to the attempt through states, through the vice president, through this crazy theory that somehow you could overthrow the will of the people in counting electoral votes. We talked about the false electors, both here in Wisconsin and six, perhaps other states as well. That attempt, all of this, a part of a larger scheme, if you will, to promote the candidacy, clearly not decided in his favor by the people of the United States of America, the candidacy of President Trump at that time, the failed candidacy in his second run for the White House. We know an awful lot about that, and we also know that the grand jury in Washington, D.C. This federal grand jury has been taking up evidence, hearing from witnesses, lots of them coming and going again in private to determine whether or not there is a federal violation of the law. Could be many, many different kinds of violations in connection with what happened before on January 6th in particular, and even following January 6th in this attempt to undermine the right election, the proper counting of electoral votes, to undermine, if you will, the nature of a republic, and to engage in what, yes, all of us have to believe was an insurrection as we saw those events on January 6th. So what happened this past week? Well, the same judge, Beryl Howell, the chief judge, again, responsible for making decisions on issues that are contested before these grand juries, with respect to this grand jury on January 6th, made a huge determination about another privilege, a different kind of privilege. This one's called the executive privilege. And in particular, she looked at whether or not the executive privilege prevents people from testifying again about conversations that they had with the now former president during the term of his time in office, including up to January 20th of 2021, things before that period of time, arguably afterwards as well, but goes to the issue of executive privilege. There is a notion out there that matters related to conversations, deliberations, considerations, discussions, even debates between high-level senior executives and the president should be subject to an executive privilege, not to disclosure in the public domain. It makes some sense, some policy sense. And indeed, in a case called U.S. versus Nixon at the time of the Watergate scandal investigation, the Supreme Court took a look at this and said, yeah, the privilege does exist. There is such a thing as preventing the huge disclosure of those kinds of deliberative conversations, again, for different reasons related to the attorney-client privilege, but for the same kinds of policy-related reasons. That is, you don't want to have in the public domain all kinds of conversations in the moment, in the contemporary moment, that might be disclosed down the road to history, but as policies are being developed, decisions made about economics and healthcare and academics and international matters, all of those things not to the benefit of any executive branch, regardless of party, if those are disclosed right away. That's a very, very commonplace, if you will, description of the executive privilege. And so a fellow named Mark Meadows, the former chief of staff under President Trump during the time that he was in office up until the very end, and others have come forward and said, you know what, I cannot tell the members of the grand jury what the president said to me on January 6th, days before that, days after that, because that would violate executive privilege. And for that reason, I'm not going to say things to the grand jury. I'm not going to tell you what happened, what we talked about during the course of those conversations. And up until now, Mark Meadows and other people have decided not to go forward and testify this past week. This past week, Beryl Howell made a major decision about that. Right after the break, I'll tell you what that's all about. I'll tell you how it is that Mark Meadows and others now obliged to testify before that grand jury. Stay with me and stay with all of us here on Morning Cannolis as we talk about that issue too.
Kids, they're just different than us. They have no inhibitions, consider silverware optional, and can find fun anywhere. And when kids get really sick, they're different than us too. Until now, children diagnosed with blood cancer have been treated like many adults. Not anymore. The Leukemia and Lymphoma Society proudly introduces the Dare to Dream Project, transforming treatment and care through advocacy, education, and the largest global clinical trial for kids with blood cancer. For the first time, a specific treatment can be matched to a specific type of cancer in a specific child. It'll be the biggest medical advancement for little patients in history. Dare to dream with us. Support the Dare to Dream Project and all the work that the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society does at lls.org.
This is the story of a very special woman. Just a few knew about her superpowers. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Here's your updated forecast. A winter storm warning continues until 4 p.m. this afternoon. Cloudy skies this afternoon with snow likely. Daytime highs approaching 38. Winds out of the north 10 to 20 miles an hour. 25 tonight, mainly clear skies. Tomorrow, highs around 43. Highs level off around 40. Monday, under cloudy skies. 42 Tuesday, 3 to 5 inches of snow today. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Ray Miller. Right now, it's 30.
This is Civic Media for the Fox Valley.
WAUKradio.com.
This final segment of our first hour here on Morning Cannolis. It is Saturday, March 25th, and I'm delighted, along with my producer, Anya, to have you join us. Call in, talk with us at 844-967-2789, always taking your questions, your comments, your perspectives on these important stories of recent days and times in America. We're chatting in this first hour. Lots of things to update in connection with these investigations of the former President Donald Trump, state investigations in not only New York, but also in Georgia. And we're talking now about this federal investigation, focusing again on January 6th, attempts to overthrow the Electoral College voting happening on that day, other matters related to the insurrection, the heroic events of January 6th of 2021. Right before the break, I was talking once again about the chief judge of the U.S. District Court, who has administrative and judicial oversight of the grand juries in that district. And this past week, she was faced once again with a challenge to the request by the prosecutors for Mark Meadows, the former chief of staff, and other members of the former senior Trump team, to come in and testify. And they were raising this notion that executive privilege, the privilege that would otherwise prevent them from talking about conversations that they had with the then president during the course of January 6th, that day in particular, but presumably days in advance and days following that prevented them from providing information, answering questions about this fact-finding grand jury about what happened on that day. This past week, huge, once again, a decision by Beryl Howell finding that the executive privilege does not prevent Mark Meadows and these other senior officials from testifying before the grand jury. Specifically, they're not entitled to be shielded by this privilege, finding, as before, that because the conversations were almost certainly about what? Criminal activity. Attempts to overthrow the government, attempts to undermine the process of the Congress in doing what it is constitutionally obliged to do. All of that, she finds, overcomes the executive privilege. Mark Meadows and others compelled, directed to testify in the grand jury about what they know. Who are some of those others? The director of national security, again, formerly the director of national security, a fellow named John Ratcliffe. Former national security advisor, a fellow named Robert O'Brien. A top aide, Stephen Miller, did a lot in the area of immigration. You recall him well. Many policies, that were very controversial during the course of the Trump administration, coming from the desk of Stephen Miller. A deputy chief of staff named Dan Scavino, also the subject of these grand jury subpoenas by the Department of Justice. All of those folks, and at least two others, required now to appear in front of the federal grand jury investigating January 6th, opening up the door to questions about what the former president said to them, what they said to the former president about things going on January 6th and the days before and just after that. Now, once again, we will not know. We will not know exactly what they said. If Mark Meadows and these other folks want to come out and tell us what happened, they are free to do that. But under the federal law, in particular Rule 6E of the Federal Rules of Criminal Procedure,
It is a crime for prosecutors to tell anyone in the public domain about what's going on. And that's a good thing. Once again, we conduct all of these investigations under secrecy to ensure the integrity of those processes, to ensure that these 26 members of the grand jury have not only access to this information, but it's not tainted by public review. It is not the subject of reviews by talking heads on some of the media, not subject to analysis by New York Times reporters, by reporters around the country, but nonetheless is the subject of appropriate investigation by grand jury members, again, when they've got witnesses in front of them telling them honestly, candidly, under oath, what happened at the times of these relevant events. That presumably will be going forward. Again, a major event at the pen of Beryl Howell this past week, commanding, directing Mark Meadows to appear and not use the shield of executive privilege, commanding Evan Corcoran in the grand jury investigation of the Mar-a-Lago event, cannot use the attorney-client privilege to preclude the answers to questions in that investigation as well. Interesting, of course, all witnesses always maintain their Fifth Amendment right not to testify if indeed matters that they might testify about tend to implicate them. That's the Fifth Amendment. It's called taking the Fifth. We know that the former president has done that in many occasions recently, most specifically in civil cases pending in New York and other places. You always have that right to do that, cannot be compelled to testify against you. Prosecutors can also immunize, basically give them immunity from prosecution. That would then compel them to testify, have no more Fifth Amendment right. We don't know if that's going to happen yet. We will see what happens down the road. But again, these major events in the grand jury investigations of January 6th and also Mar-a-Lago happening just this past week in Washington, D.C., as always, right here on our Saturday morning broadcast. We will talk more about those if and as the federal grand jury returns an indictment or indictments against the former president, other people, again, their analysis based upon probable cause. And then plainly, we will talk more about what those charges are, what the scope of them is, and what they mean for the future of America, certainly what they mean for the identified defendants in those grand jury indictments. Likewise, when it happens, the broadcast of this studio and of civic media generally will certainly focus on and cover the results of any grand jury decisions in Manhattan and in Georgia. All of those pending right now, absent clear resolution. We have had some resolution, however, in some matters that have been the subjects of indictments also related to January 6th. And in our final moments here and coming into the first moments of our second hour here at Morning Cannoli, we're going to talk more about updates when it comes to the findings of guilt with respect to people actually on the ground that day. A lot of these investigations we talked about related to the pretty high-level people involved in orchestrating, managing, perhaps directing the actions that could, in fact, be in violation of federal and state law. We know as well that the Department of Justice has indicted over the past several months two groups of people. We know about the Oath Keepers. We also know about others also involved in these cases that have been responsible for organizing and orchestrating, if you will, the matters that relate to the attempt to overthrow the congressional activities of January 6th. So just this past week, four more people who marched with the Oath Keepers militia into the Capitol on January 6th were convicted on Monday of conspiracy to obstruct the work of Congress. And that brings to an end the third and final role of these trials in these matters pending before the federal district court. Right after our next break into our second hour, we're going to talk more about that and other matters. Stay with us for all of that here on Morning Cannolis.
Talking to your kids about the dangers of vaping can be hard. Getting them to listen to Hot Gossip is easy. So here's some drama you could share with your kid.
Dude, did you hear about Cassie and Jake?
No, but did you hear that vaping can cause irreversible lung damage and nicotine affects brain development?
Nuh-uh.
You don't need to gossip if you want to have an open conversation about vaping. So if you want to get tips on when and how to talk to your kids, visit talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
We've all felt left out. And for people who move to this country, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay. WGBW 1590 AM Denmark. W250 CV Green Bay. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC.